It's Law's Cool Podcast number 12. I unfortunately don't have the intro music yet, but we'll work on that for next week. My name is Devin Johnston. I'm a second-year law student at Robson Hall at the University of Manitoba. Omar Hereda has asked me to host the podcast for the upcoming year, so I'm very excited to be involved, and I'll have some very big shoes to fill there. Today I had a conference call with Dr. Sam Trosso of the University of Western Ontario and a group of political bloggers from across the country. They're concerned about Bill C-61, an act to amend the Copyright Act that contains some controversial amendments to Canada's copyright laws. Let's listen in. So let me introduce the panel. I'll start with Dr. Sam Trosso. Dr. Trosso is an associate professor at the University of Western Ontario. He's jointly appointed to the Faculty of Law and the Faculty of Information and Media Studies. He's also a co-author of Copyright for Canadian Copyright, A Citizen's Guide. Sam, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Excellent. Next we have Scott Tribe. Scott is the author of the popular blog Scott's Diatribes. He's also an administrator of the Progressive Bloggers blogging community, and I'd like to thank him especially for all the efforts he's put into promoting this podcast and helping put the panel together. And Scott, we're very excited to have you on the show today.
Pleased to be here.
Excellent. We also have John Klein. John is a blogger at Abandoned Stuff by Saskboy. He's calling in from Saskatchewan today. How are you doing?
Great.
And an expert on tinfoil hats, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. That's sort of my my gig anyway.
Excellent. And finally, we have Mike Park from the blog Rational Reasons. Mike describes himself as a left libertarian. Is that right?
That's correct.
Excellent. You're calling in from Ottawa today?
Ottawa.
Excellent. And my name's Devin Johnston from devinjohnston.ca. And apparently, I'm going to be doing this podcast for lawiscool.com as well. And I'm calling in from Winnipeg today. So the topic of today's show is Bill C-61 and copyright reform. So to give a little bit of background on the bill, it was introduced by the Conservative government back in June. And the bill introduces a number of amendments to Canada's copyright laws in respect of digital media. The government has said that the new legislation will clarify a whole bunch of rights for consumers, including things like time shifting and format shifting, but there's been a lot of controversy as well. Some of the critics, such as Michael Geist of the University of Ottawa, have pointed out that some of the provisions around digital locks and some of the punitive aspects of the bill seem to be against the interests of consumers. And have we struck the right balance here? So for maybe a little bit more detail on the bill, I'd like to ask Dr. Trosso, your law professor, if you could give us maybe the Coles Notes versions of what are the highlights of the bill? What are the most important features of it in your view?
Okay, I mean, it's hard because we're looking at over 50 pages of single-spaced PDF here. So one thing, the bill is not as simple. It's a very complex bill that includes a lot of different provisions. Some of these provisions, according to the government and others, are necessitated by Canada's desire to implement a 1996 International WIPO Copyright Treaty. There are a lot of provisions of the bill that are simply housekeeping and are not particularly onerous or controversial. However, there are a lot of sections of the bill that really do create a lot of very serious problems for consumers, educators, students, librarians, researchers, artists, anybody who wants to have broad access to information. And I think the most, probably the most serious set of provisions, which I guess we'll focus on, are the provisions implementing what's known as the Protection for Technological Protection Measures, the anti-circumvention rules. And these are very clearly modeled on the United States Digital Millennium Copyright Act. I feel comfortable calling this bill the Canadian DMCA for that reason. There are a lot of other provisions, too, maybe we can talk about.
Okay. So let's talk to Scott for a moment. Scott, you're an administrator of the Progressive Bloggers, which has been pretty firmly opposed to Bill C-61. What are some of the concerns you're hearing from bloggers and others? Why are people upset about this bill?
Well, I think the big thing is that it's seen as you said, a copy or a copycat version of the DMCA, and that particular piece of legislation has been criticized as being overly protective for the guys who make the stuff and not very good on the consumer side of the ledger. And I think a lot of people are concerned that we're doing a clone of that. And I've seen Michael Guy's site, and he's at some point on his blog claimed that these digital lock provisions are going to be even worse than what's in the DMCA. And there's not going to be a lot of stuff in there that will protect consumers. I mean, they put in a lot of stuff out to the media about how, oh, now you're going to be allowed to formally copy this stuff. And, you know, that sounds great on the surface, but when you dig into the meat of it, basically, I think you're going to see that the Canadian DMCA is probably one of the most restrictive copyright laws in the world. And I think that's part of the reason that the Facebook group that Mr. Geis has put up has now got, at last look this morning, around 91,000 Canadians on that group. And that shows that there is not just concern among geeks like us in the blogosphere, but there is some concern out there, and it may be a sleeper issue in the presumed federal election coming up in the next month or two.
I actually checked the Facebook group numbers this morning. When I checked, it was up at 91,492 members, so closing in on 100,000. There's a lot of aspects to the introduction of the bill that are worth talking about. The bill itself is interesting and noteworthy, but also the campaign in opposition to C61 has been really interesting for its use of social media, including Facebook and YouTube and other things like that. Now, I tried to include someone on the panel who would kind of come on and defend the Minister Prentice perspective on the bill, but I wasn't able to get anybody because we were kind of putting things together at the last minute, so it sort of falls to me to play devil's advocate. So I'll maybe put out an idea to the panel, and whoever wants to respond to it or contribute their thoughts can do so. But what do you make of the idea of markets coming in and being what determines the kind of distribution models that, you know, movie and music industries distribute their works? I've heard the minister say, you know, oh, true, the manufacturers can put in digital locks on the material that they put out there, but consumers can choose not to buy that. And, you know, when you look at the big online music retailers, most of them seem to be moving away from DRM. So what do you guys make of this idea that the market will come in and determine whether or not distributors are going to be using DRM? Shouldn't we give distributors the freedom to have a more restrictive or less restrictive distribution model depending on their business model and their preferences?
I've got an answer for that. They do have that freedom. Right now, manufacturers can make something with DRM, Latin, digital locked media. They can sell DVDs that are disposable and only work after a few plays. They can sell Blu-ray discs that you can't copy to your computer like you can a DVD. And right now, the customers are choosing the ones that are DRM free. They will go and buy a DVD player from a market that isn't region locked, so that means you can play a DVD from anywhere in the world. Right now, it's if you buy a mainstream DVD player, you can only play ones bought on your own continent. Mm-hmm. So you can't go to Asia or Europe and pick up cheap DVDs there or ones that aren't even available in Canada. Customers that would be buying Rogers iPhones are choosing to import them and unlock them themselves, and they have the legal right to do that right now in Canada, but this bill is going to turn that into a criminal activity where they could be sued $20,000.
Yeah, I look at this. Sorry, Professor, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say this bill has absolutely nothing to do with protecting free markets. In fact, anybody who really believes in free markets, and I'm not a big proponent of free markets because I think they have very serious social costs, but this is not about free markets. This is about imposing a certain model that indeed, as was just said, the markets are rejecting.
Yeah, that's a professor took the words right out of my mouth. I am a fairly ardent proponent of truly free markets, but what this bill does is the exact opposite. It is imposing, it is taking away one of the options in the market, that, and it is imposing from a legal standpoint a particular business model that is sadly outdated. And I would even go to the point to say that it really doesn't help the producers, the real producers of digital content, such as people who make who actually work in making the movies and actually work in making the music, are usually not the ones who benefit from it. It's usually the distribution companies. And what we are seeing here is the 21st century equivalent of legislation to protect buggy whip companies that we had 100 years ago, or legislation that requires people to walk 100 feet ahead of a car with a red light. It is to protect an old, outdated business model instead of letting the market actually take care of that itself, which in for things like this kind of consumer good, it's one of the few things the market does very well.
Interesting. All right, I have another question for the panel, and it might seem a bit shocking, but why should Canadians care about copyright law? It seems like to some that this is going to have a relatively minor impact on daily life. Why is this becoming such a hot button issue?
If you can't open it, you don't own it. If the Conservative government and people who support this are truly about private property and support property, they're imposing a model that actually withholds property rights from people. If we can even consider things like software and ideas and things property, which I don't, but from that perspective, it doesn't make sense, right? It would be like forcing everyone to buy a car with the hood welded shut. You're not allowed to look inside the hood. You're not allowed to play around inside the car. If you need something, you have to go back to the manufacturer. Oh, and by the way, if they find out that you have, they can remotely turn your car off and you can never drive it again. Now, there's a lot of words to describe that, but freedom and property aren't two of them. And I think what people finally come down to realizing that they can't copy the stuff from their DVDs so they can watch it on their iPhone on the bus, or they can't, they can't rip some of the songs to make a backup because they're afraid their disc might get melted in the car. When people can't do that, all of a sudden, to do things that we used to do back in the 80s when we used to make mixtapes for our girlfriends, things like that, people are going to start to notice. And it's just another example of individual freedom to do what they wish with the things they have purchased with their money is being eroded in order to protect an outdated and outmoded business model. And I think that, maybe it's a little bit of a sleeper, but as soon as it hits the point where people suddenly can't do something that, I bought a DVD and you're telling me it isn't actually mine, that I can't do with it what I will, then they're going to suddenly have a problem.
I would briefly add, I think people care because they don't really appreciate that they're going to get fined $500 for supposedly infringing the use of, private use infringement. And I think that simple realization alone makes people get up in arms about it. That's all I'm going to add to it. I think that particular thing gets people resentful at this sort of law.
To that, I think I would add that more and more people are becoming creators and users at the same time. A lot of the new technology really makes it possible for people to be engaging in extremely creative and innovative, transformative uses of existing information resources that were not possible several years ago without a huge investment. And this is just getting down to a very, very common level. And people do not want to have these locks, these onerous regulations interfering with their ability to engage in the types of creative activities that copyright is supposed to be supporting in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sitting here on my Mac and I can whip out GarageBand and iMovie, and I can make a fairly decent video if I, invested the time in it. That has lowered the barrier of entry into certain markets that the people who actually are in those markets now don't want. There's a reason that there's a lot of regulations and there's a lot of, you know, in the movies and music industry, because it used to be you'd have to have a garage band, you'd have to have thousands and millions of dollars of recording equipment. Now you can make fairly decent content yourself on a computer for a couple of $1,000s. The barrier of entry is gone. The market has changed. The method of production has changed, and they're still trying to enforce the old way of doing things.
And the same thing goes for the dissemination of research results and
scholarly
publication. So it's not just in the arts. It's across many aspects of society.
Although, again, to play devil's advocate, I mean, if this bill were to go through, is there anything, you know, preventing me as a creator from, you know, from releasing my work under a Creative Commons license or publishing it online and in new formats and using new technologies?
No, but what happens if someone else, if someone takes it, records it on a disc, and all of a sudden, you know, the disc has DRM on it. You know, there's a situation where something you've given away is being used by someone else, and it's been locked without your knowledge. There's all sorts of things. I work in software, and we run into this kind of thing all the time. You know, how do you use this? What do you, you know, how do you use this particular library? What are the licensing implications? It's something that we wrestle with in software. But with this kind of copyright in there, it's now out of your hands. Someone else can say, or the government can decide, yeah, you know, if I want to make a charge of copyright infringement, I can.
So I'm hearing a lot of, you know, criticism of Bill C-61 and a lot of concerns about the proposal that's out there. What would our panelists today propose as an alternative, you know, intellectual property regime?
I don't expect you to
produce a 50-page report on it, but, you know, what would be your general recommendations?
Well, I don't think this bill can be amended by sitting down and, you know, working through a couple of sections. I think it needs to be scrapped. What's not in the bill is just as important as what's in the bill, and that's the recognition of the expansion of fair dealing. In terms of what an overall intellectual property regime should be looking at, we should get back to the basic purposes of trying to promote innovation based on what the technology and use patterns are today, not based on what they were under an old business model. So I think the government is just way off base if their intention is to promote the arts and innovation. I don't think we need to be expanding these monopolies, which is what copyright and patents really are.
I agree. We need to scrap this law as it is right now. It doesn't. It's an attempt to shift the debate so far over in one direction that we forget about what copyright's supposed to be actually doing. It's not supposed to be protecting business models. It's supposed to be protecting Canadian culture. And business will take care of itself. When things are popular, people will buy it. If we give artists the chance to make money from their products that they create, that's what we want to do with copyright. But we don't want to make it so ridiculous that when an artist has passed on and they've made money from something for, say, 40 years, like the Hockey Night in Canada theme, should they still be making money hand over fist on the same work that they did 40 years ago? Most people, when they create something, they're expected to create the same thing again the next day or the next week to make more money. Artists, we've given them, I think, a whole lot of extra leeway, and copyright maybe should be thought of as a temporary ownership of the creator and then passed into the culture much earlier than it is right now.
It's kind of an interesting discussion on innovation, because when I talk to you know, conservatives or people who are supportive of the bill, they talk about protecting innovation as well, but they seem to be talking about a very different model of innovation, which is driven primarily by financial concerns, and so they advocate a regime where creators can put, you know, strong protections on their work so that they can limit access to the information and then sell it out at a higher price. So I think there are broader issues at play here, and definitely more than we'll have time to talk about today. I want to maybe shift gears a little bit, though, and talk about the opposition movement to C-61. As we mentioned earlier, they seem to be sort of walking the walk, as well as just outline their criticisms. And so we've seen the extensive use of social media. You know, Cory Doctorow of blingboing.net has been active in, you know, promoting video content and, you know, blogging about it. We talked about Michael Geist, and we talked about the Fair Copyright for Canada Facebook group. Are these methods really going to reach the average voter if we find ourselves, as it looks like we might, in a federal election campaign? I know that most of us on the panel today are sort of techno geeks and follow the social media quite closely, but is the average voter really going to hear about the issue, and you know, is this sort of you know, next generation campaign really going to work?
Well, 91,000 people on a Facebook group seems to answer part of that question, because I think if you would ask Professor Geist what if he thought he would get those numbers, I bet you he would be saying no, he did not expect that, because there really wasn't a lot of advertisement about that Facebook group, you know, in the papers or anything. I mean, he put it at his own site, and I mean, some of us in the internet saw it and kind of helped give him a little promo, but I mean, 91,000 people have felt compelled to join that group, and I mean, you know, part of that opposition is why Prentice backed off introducing that bill, you know, a few months ago in the first place, and now they've tried to reintroduce it with papered over reforms, but that has not, you know, stopped people from complaining about it, and that hasn't certainly stopped people from joining the Facebook group. And I think it's a, you know, we can talk about how Canadians are per capita tuned in to the internet and all that. And so I think it's a grassroots movement, and I think it is an issue that does have resonance, even though it isn't really being reported on every day in the traditional media.
Well,
I think people are...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think people are going to... I think it's a sleeper issue that could come up. I think if people are really concerned about it, they'll make it come up. I think average Canadians are going to be interested in this when they do what average Canadians do. For instance, if I need to make a copy of my daughter's Jonas Brothers CD so that we can have one in the car or one in her room and keep the original so that, you know, we only use it in the house and it doesn't get lost, and all of a sudden I can't do that because I'm either physically blocked from doing it by the software on my computer or by the proprietary format that the music is burned into, or the fact that the disc stops working, then, you know, that's going to suddenly, people are going to suddenly go, wait a minute, I used to be able to do this. It's essentially built-in obsolescence, and that's never been anything that any consumer has ever thought was a good idea. I'm paying money for something and I want it to work. I don't want a time bomb in it so that it stops working and forces me to fork out more money later. Again, that's an old, outdated business model. And when you get people doing things like that, that, you know, we're not talking about people who photocopy entire books because they want the book. You know, we don't care if students photocopy a few sections of a book while they're doing research so they can take it home instead of taking the single book out of the library. We're not, you know, we don't want to worry about that. What we're talking about is criminalizing mothers and grandmothers and people who out there right now are doing things which are harming no one, are hurting no one's business model, really, and then will be punished and forced not to be able to do that. Now, I think that will suddenly get people to say, hey, wait a minute, that's a bit draconian. What's going on here?
The opposition to this bill is very, very deep, and it includes a lot of much more traditional groups that have been around working on the copyright file for many years. You've got groups like the Canadian Library Association, the Canadian Association of University Teachers, the Canadian Federation of Students. These tend to be groups in the educational and library sector. But they're very much opposed to this bill, and they've been working on this file for many, many, many years, and they're finally starting to see more people join with them in what used to be a very, very lonely fight.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, though, I think hasn't gone as mainstream as it could be right now, because part of it is due to the companies that benefit most from the bill are in charge of our TV and newspapers in the country, and the radio stations. There isn't really a mainstream media that will purposefully say, oh, this is a bad bill because it gives us a lot of power. So we're kind of stuck with the media that is most popular, not really telling the most people what most people think about the bill. It's what big business wants us to think about the bill.
Well, it should also be mentioned that there are a lot of business interests, and I think this is a very important response to the sort of pro-business ideology of the government. There are a lot of businesses that have come out against this bill.
Yeah.
The Canadian Retail Council, that represents the large, you know, the large retailers, is very much opposed to this bill. A lot of the electronic manufacturers are very much opposed to this bill. The internet service providers, phone companies. I mean, there's just a lot of business opposition to this bill. So I think the government is really way off base when they try to make this a business versus anti-business type of issue.
Oh, absolutely. Because I mean, there are a lot of businesses who realize that should something this draconian come in, they're going to lose people to an underground economy. There's a, you know, even with the price of DVDs and all the stuff that we have on, you know, the levy we currently have on CDs and DVDs, there's still people who are willing to go underground because the prices are too high for the stuff that they're asking for. And if this comes in and makes it harder, that's just going to drive more. That's going to make people like my wife, who would never in a million years thinking about getting a pirated song, all of a sudden it's like, well, you know, if that's what it takes, then that's what it takes.
All right. Before we call it an afternoon, the minister has stated that, you know, assuming that we're, again, not in an election campaign, that there will be public consultations coming up. And I know that one of the criticisms of the bill was the manner in which it was introduced. There was a perception that it was U.S. industry lobbyists pulling the strings of the government and the public not being consulted. What does the panel see as the prospects for public consultation? Will it be a big groundswell of opposition to the bill that defeats it, or what will happen?
Well, depends. Well, again, the question is on the election, right? But and who gets in, and how many seats? But I'm going to reveal my bias here. I'm a liberal blog supporter, so I have it in for the Tories. So take it with that with a grain of salt. But I mean, this government tends to do stuff if it sees something that it sees as a potential vote loser. They usually back off, and that's part of what happened with this bill, why it got backed off 3 months or whatever it was. You've seen it in other situations. I think if they're back in a minority, and we don't know that for sure, but if they're back in a minority and they get a lot of public opposition to this, I would not be surprised that if this bill dies, because they are obsessed with getting a majority government, and if they see all that groundswell of opposition, they're going to back down because they are trying to get that majority government. Now, I'm being biased. I don't think they're going to win the next election, and I think that the Liberals have stated that they do not support this legislation, and that a whole new bill needs to be made up on this. But that's what I think will happen if the Tories get back in a minority.
Well, I'm not even as confident as you are, Scott, because I remember during the last election, everybody was worried about these people courting not just Bev Oda, but courting the former Liberal minister for that same portfolio. And there was a big, I mean, we read it in all our blogs, there was a big issue of this person, and I can't remember the name at the moment.
Sarmide Boothe, and we actually campaigned to get rid of her, you know,
oh.
But I mean, you know, I understand that, but I'm a little more confident that... Yes, that's right. And so, anyway, sorry to interrupt, but that's who it was.
But,
yes.
Well, I realize that, but that's what I'm saying. I'm not... I don't think that the industry who is really driving this is going to wash their hands if the Conservatives don't get in. They're going to go after the Liberals, and you know my stance. Liberals and Conservatives, the only difference is the color of the ties. So they're just going to put on a different color tie and walk into that office and try to push it as well.
And I agree with Mike. I think that the Liberals have proven that in opposition they'll say they're against it, and when they're in government they'll start being courted by the big media, and they'll go to the big fancy dinners and start tipping their hat to the MPAA and the other industries in the states that are behind this bill. really it's up to the people. And unfortunately, this issue is the kind that will make or break people's confidence in how much influence they have really in the government, because nobody I've talked to really wants a bill where they're going to be liable for $20,000 in a lawsuit for doing something that they might do every day. But they're going to talk to their MPs, and they're going to find out that their MPs are not the ones calling the shots, and they're going to get pretty frustrated with the government.
And I think the only way that this is when people just start ignoring it and say, look, they can't put everyone in jail. They can't fine everybody. And, you know, the underground, there's going to be an underground economy if this pops in. And, you know, like any other underground economy, it's going to force money and profits into people who we don't want to give money and profits to. But people are going to do it. And it's not really, you know, it's going to create criminals. It's not going to solve the problem.
All right. Well, I told you all that I would only keep you for about half an hour, and I see that we're coming up to about that time. Does anybody have any final thoughts they'd like to throw out there before we call it an afternoon?
Well, I'd like to really emphasize the point that should an election be called, those who have been opposing Bill C-61 should not just claim victory and go home and forget about it. This bill is going to re-arise in the next parliament one way or another, and it's likely to be just as bad, whether it's a conservative majority, in which case we're in so much trouble that I'm not sure copyright is going to be the worst. It's going to be the least of our problems in that case. But I think it's going to come up again in the next parliament. So we just can't rest on our laurels about this. We have to try to understand what some of these provisions are, why they're bad, why they hurt users, and why the purposes of copyright in the first place can be met through less onerous alternatives.
Exactly. I think one of the things I'd like to leave people with is a tool, a mind tool, a thought that will help them sort of get through the mental cruft that the people who support this bill will bring out. They'll always trot out numbers about the billions of dollars being lost by software companies and by music companies because of this. But the best way to think about this is that it's artificial, it's paper losses, they're never real losses. For instance, people who go out and get a free download of a cracked version of Photoshop or of some songs are people who aren't going to pay the $900 that Adobe requires you to pay. So it's a mark that it's people who were never going to buy the product in the first place. It can't be counted as losses. So when you see those kinds of numbers, you really got to think critically and question exactly where they're getting them from, because often that's how they calculate the numbers. They inflate them and make them outrageous, and it's nothing like that.
I think it's important for all of us who are tuned into the issue to talk to people who aren't familiar with copyright and aren't familiar with the internet, and they just might use music for entertainment. They might watch TV. They might record TV on their PVR, and they need to know that the Conservatives bill and possibly ones that will come down in the future are most likely attempting to make activities that they do every day illegal and open them up to huge lawsuits. And they need to understand that so that they will oppose this bill until they finally are consulted by their members of parliament and find out what they really want copyright to do for Canada.
I will just add to people listening that if they're passionately opposed to this now, to keep writing your MPs, write the leader of the official opposition, write all the party leaders, write Jim Prentice, let them know that you aren't going to stand for this type of a law and that you want fair copyright for Canadians. I know that's the cliche we're using, but that's what we're looking for. So I urge people to keep doing that and don't give up doing it.
Excellent. Well, I think that's about it for us today, so let me just thank all of my guests again. John Klein from Abandoned Stuff by Saskboy, Dr. Sam
Thanks.
Trosso of the University of Western Ontario, Scott Tribe, an administrator of Progressive Bloggers and the author of Scott's Diatribes, and Mike Park from Rational Reasons. Thank you all so much for participating today, and I hope to talk to you all again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
All right.